Here's Wilson, and on the right side, he scores!
Rebound loose, wild scramble in front, score! Ovechkin with a buzzer beater! It'll count!
And a hat trick tonight, number 21, Evan Malouf.
Hello, welcome to the Power Play Point Podcast. I am your host, the Blue Liner on Point, coming to you live to tape from Glen Burnie, Maryland. And along with this continuing ride is my forever co-host, live from Centerville, Virginia, the beautiful, yeah. The wonderful mermaid mentalist, Fairfax's finest, Anna Knox.
Hi. That ego boost. Thanks, y'all. It's always a good, even if it's total lies, it's still all good.
Well, it's what I'm here for, total lies. Ego boost.
Total lies. You're being paid well. So I'm like, just kidding. I'm here, long ass day at work, but I did get a chance to finally get in the pool and swim, and that was amazing. So I feel all good and relaxed and, yeah, excited about this new little conference call thing.
Yeah, it is pool weather, but, as you said, so what Anna's talking about is we're trying a little experiment here, partially because we want to open up the show to, our ever expanding loyal listener base. Thank you all. And partially because I'm more than a little fed up with Skype right now, because I don't know if you all could tell in the last episode, but we had to do a bit of chopping because Skype, for whatever reason, kept on deciding to drop the call over and over and over again. I had to do very annoying. I had to do quite a bit of splicing and dicing.
Give this a shot.
Yeah, definitely going to give this a shot. Like I said, we're wanting to open this up to our listener base, because we're using something called Uber Conference, and it allows us to do it's an online conference software that's in the cloud, allows us to have a live conference so people can call in now. Obviously, we're not going to have too many people, at least to start. We're actually going to have very special guests come on here in a little bit to help us go over the last two games, as well as how the Caps have been playing in general. If this thing turns out to work as well as we hope it does, it'll probably become a regular thing. Now, that's not to say that we won't revert back to Skype, at least for part of the time. When it's just going to be the two of us,
right?
And we just record for strictly podcast.
It's a little Skype breakup, but a little timeout, and we're looking at other options, and then we will probably hook back up together with Skype at some point. But right now, we're just seeing what else is out there. That.
Yeah, it's kind of like an open relationship like that.
Mm-hmm.
Way to put it. Way to put.
See, what could you possibly have to edit?
What we're going to do is going to bring our special guest on, and might as well just say it right now. It's going to be Robbie Gross from the Sports on the Hill podcast. I've been itching to get him on for quite a while. That's another reason why, like I said, we're trying to open things up, and he actually suggested this software. So we're going to try and open things up, going to get him on the line, because he's been wanting to come on our show for quite a while now. And actually, I think we got him going now. So let's just go ahead and bring him on now.
Okay.
We could.
Yeah. You hear me?
Robbie,
hey.
Robbie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
Well, I'm excited to be here, guys. You know, I've listened to your podcast for quite some time. I was trying to figure out, Gil, when did you start the Power Play Point podcast?
I actually started it 5 years ago.
Wow.
My first episode was not long after. See, I had started a blog the year that the Caps were upset in seven games by the Canadiens. I think that was 2010. I was doing a blog of my own, and I figured, well, I'm a better talker than I was a writer, so I figured turn that blog into a podcast, and it was like 2011.
Awesome.
I had started.
Yeah, so, wow. And it's cool because I've followed it a little bit. You know, I've been a part of a lot of different Caps boards over the years and moderate a bunch of them. And so I've come across it over time, and I thought it was older, and then I sort of came back to it a couple of years ago. And then obviously, Anna, is this your first year on the show or second year? I was trying to figure that out.
First.
This is your first year. Yeah. So I definitely listened to like a season or a couple of years of it before and then since. And I love both of your energy, obviously. I've gotten to have both of you guys on Sports on the Hill podcast. And it's been quite an incredible run for the Capitals. And it's just an exciting time. And I enjoyed having you on, Gil, 2 weeks ago. I know that we didn't win game one, which is unfortunate. But we've been able to win all the ones since. And obviously, it was fun that we recorded last night's podcast, Anna and I together, and with Carol, obviously, CP3, and it was a good show, and I was obviously very nervous going into it, but we got a lot to talk about. I don't know how long you guys have been talking about it, or if you haven't talked about the games yet, so I'll leave it to you to ask the questions.
Ahead,
so, we were actually just more or less getting started. And again, this is the Uber Conference software that we're using and launching it for the first time live, as it were, and using it with the podcast. So we're kind of adjusting to that, as it were, just to get that brief technical explanation out of the way. But the plan was to pretty much recap the last two games here, because that's where we left off in the last episode. So pardon me. Let's just go ahead and dive right in. The last two games, of course, were played here at home at the Cap One Arena, and very good start to Game Three with the captain scoring 70 seconds in, assisted by John Carlson and Evgeny Kuznetsov. Very good start to that. And about 10 or 11 minutes later, Kuznetsov puts them up 2-0. And it was pretty much rolling from there. And we all know what happened. It was very dominant performance, except for one about 5 second span, which we'll get to in a moment. But I was very, very impressed overall with how they played.
Yeah, I mean, game. I'll let Anna break it down first, but it's funny, last night on the show I was so excited about previewing Game 4 that I kind of glossed over it a little bit in my explanation, but I'll let Anna start with some of her thoughts, but I thought it was a great matchup.
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was one of those games where they came out from the very start, from the puck drop, looking like this is it, you know, they were not going to stop. And, you know, you've got Kuzi back and everyone was happy to see that. And they just looked good. And Gil and I've always talked about, or maybe I've obsessively talked about chemistry, but God, when it's good on that team, it is good. And they look like they were also enjoying the playing, you know, they didn't look stressed. They didn't look tense. And that's the Caps that everybody you know, wants to see and enjoy. And I'm, you know, I know we talked about it last night, but wow, with the fans, so awesome.
Yeah, it was really an incredible experience. As Gil was talking about, there was a scoreless first period to start. It made me very nervous because the longer there are no goals in a game, there's a huge advantage for the road team, right? Because if you can keep it close, you can sort of steal one at the end. And so the object I feel for the home team is try to get as many goals in that first as you can. Build up as big of a lead as you can, especially with past Capitals success in previous years. You know, you can't have too many goals. You can't have too big of a lead. And so I was happy to see that we put together a good defensive first period. You know, 0-0, there was a lot of swings both ways. But then, as Gil was talking about, for Ovi to score very early in the second, a minute and 10 seconds in, and it was an important goal for the franchise because we had never won a home game. I went in 98. I talk about this a lot on the Sports on Hill podcast, but in 98, I went to game 4, and we lost, and I got to see a different team in red hoist in our building. And it was the single greatest Caps game I've ever been to because I've always wanted to see the Cup, and it's rare to get to see it. But, you know, I saw at that moment that we weren't that team that was sort of, you know, the Red Wings were phenomenal. You know, they swept two Cups in a row. And so to lose to them, we weren't even supposed to be there. We were a 4 seed that year. But this team is supposed to be here, and I know that it sort of surprised people because the last 2 years we were the President's Trophy. We didn't win. But in some cases, I always kind of felt that we needed that underdog role. I never thought that we play well when we're favored. So I kind of loved the matchup that no one was picking us in this Vegas series, and everyone's saying, oh, the Capitals will fall apart in the end, and Vegas is this dominant force that no one can stop, and no one can ever stop Fleury. But, you know, Ovechkin has decent numbers against Fleury career. We've seen him a lot, probably more than a lot of the West Coast teams. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, he has dominated us in the past, but you know, a lot of people in the junkies talk about do theory and the idea that eventually, you know, things will come around for us, and that's what I'm hoping for with this year. But it was big for Ovi because they're always saying, you know, whoever shows up in the big game or the playoffs, but the reality is a point per game in the playoffs, and he's top four in current players in the NHL in playoff scoring. So, you know, for him to get that first big goal and lead at a home game was really important. Obviously, Kuzi, who now has 30 points, which we'll get into, but, you know, for him to follow that up, and those have been our two sort of best players on offense. And then obviously Devontae Smith-Pelly had a clutch goal because when it was 2-1 early in the third, I started to get really nervous. And so obviously DSP has gotten a knack for scoring at clutch times.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think, you know what, Gil, let's hear from you. Are you there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still here.
Good.
Yeah, no, I was, I agree. I was a little nervous, fourth play period, but as I always say, you want to check out the first 10 minutes, and that's a good barometer of how the game is going to go. You always want to get off to that good start. And if the body language isn't there, that, you know, the team isn't into it, then it's going to be a long night. But it was there. They were there to play. They were obviously there to do what they can, whatever they could do to win the game. I think the momentum from the game before, where Holtby had made that big save, I think had a big factor in that, and they just looked like they had the momentum. And it carried them, and
right.
Finally, and after, you know, a scoreless 20 minutes, that they came out and did what they had to do.
Yeah, Gil, real quickly, I want to talk about momentum real fast because you just mentioned it, and I feel that there's sometimes momentum in different sports. You know, we cover a lot of different sports on our show, but in some sports I feel like momentum carries over more and less. In hockey, I've always thought that it does in game-to-game, series-to-series, potentially there is momentum swings, but sometimes when you hear Barry Trotz speak and a lot of other people, including some of the players, they don't feel that there truly is, you know, momentum from game to game, that each game has to be thought of and treated as totally different. I thought that I saw some carryover as well, but it's interesting that the coaches and players tend to think that there is very little carryover.
Well, I think that's more to do with the fact that, you know, I think players and coaches are at a loss to explain things like that. And that's why whenever you have a matchup, that's very, very important. One of the things that gets covered is something called intangibles, meaning stuff you can't explain right away, stuff you can't wrap your hands around, stuff you can't touch. And momentum is definitely a big part of that. And so when you hear a player or coach say, well, or downplay it, and they don't say much about it, I think that's, you know, that's not them. I don't think it's them dismissing it so much as saying, well, I mean, it's one of those things and I can't really articulate it. That's not to say they're not articulate. It's just very, very hard to put into words what it is, other than, you know, the momentum, the carryover of momentum from whatever happened before.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I've always gone back and forth on whether it A, exists and how you can try to capture it and, you know, what you do with it and, you know, how you stop other teams that are rolling and knock them off. Because, I mean, we've seen a lot of these interesting ebbs and flows through the playoffs overall. It's been very interesting. The Capitals have either won 2 games in a row or 4 games in a row for the whole entire playoffs. Right? So I'm hoping that we're on a 4 game in a row right now. You know, if you go back, it's very consistent. And so there's been these, like, dips at different times. Some dips were obviously worse. We found ourselves down in every series. All 4 series, we've been down at some point. And it's just interesting that we've been able to sort of course correct in a way that we have struggled with before, you know, as previous Capitals teams, as they've fallen in the second round. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are. You know, we obviously have a very resilient team. It's a very young team. Maybe they don't know their history as much as some of our veterans did. And instead of getting outside veteran leadership, we have more internal veteran leadership in Ovechkin and Backstrom and obviously Brooks Orpik. But, you know, it's interesting. Momentum has played a big part, I think, in these playoffs for the Capitals, and I hope that we can just continue to ride that all the way through.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know, but, you know, being like a big sports fan, across the board, I think that momentum is definitely something that's there, because I feel like, you know, and I'm not downplaying it, but what I'm saying, like, when you have a team of players and you have vets and you have rookies or whatever it is, or like a Kempney who, you know, has played for a while, a little bit older, and you are putting them out there on the ice. There is something about, you know, you have a chemistry with them and they get along, and when things are going well and everything's kind of fallen into place, the momentum, I feel, then continues, which is why I feel like Trotz didn't change up the lines a whole lot, because I looked at it like a momentum, like, you know, hey, doesn't this feel great to get out there, play our hardest, know where, you know, the other players are on the ice, and but also have fun and not be so tense and not be so stressed out, and then win and have that be the momentum to and the mindset to get them into the next game. I think with these guys, there is no dark cloud of, oh, crap, it's the Penguins, or, oh, it's this, or, oh, it's that. It's like, listen, we haven't been in this position with this team before, like these players before. And so if they can go into it with a mindset and the physical game and everything else, then I would say, yeah, that's your momentum to keep going, because what they've got right now is working for everybody, if that makes any sense.
It does. It does. I certainly think it does. So Robbie, more to the point you made, if you look at, well, of course, overall, but in game three in particular, you were asking about how to maintain momentum or versus how not to lose it, or if you're on the other end, how to take it away. Well, I think game three was a very, very good example of that. If you look, just basically the timing of the goals scored, the first 2 minutes, next period, you always watched probably 3,000 plus games in my life, and I've always noticed that they describe the goal, and that's when. So if you give up one in the first few minutes of the game, or in the last few minutes a period, they call that the backbreaking goal. Well, all you have to do is look at the timing. 70 seconds into the second period, the score is open, the tie's broken. Now, they had a moment later on in the game where Holtby had his gaffe and gave up the puck and gave Thomas Nosek the layup to make it 2-1, 3:29 in the third. But the Caps pretty much stuck to their game. They could have wilted. They could have used that as an excuse to give up. Hey, our goalie's not doing the right thing. But, you know, 10 minutes later, when you wondered whether Knights would pull their goalie to get their advantage on, Smith-Pelly comes in and he scores one of his crucial goals. So an element, and maybe it's not everything, but I think an element to momentum is timing. And above all teams, I think the Caps have displayed that to great ability to make the great play when they need to, at the moment they need to.
Yeah, it's been really incredible to watch. And I know we'll get into game four in a second. I'm sort of itching to, just because it was such a great game. But game three was that all-important first home win and the ability to try to continue that momentum, as you're talking about, and set us up for success. Obviously, you drop the first one back at home. You know, it's back to a situation when you're down and you need to win game four, and all that pressure is back put on us, where now it sets us up for success, where, you know, if we were to lose game four, we would, worst case scenario, go back to Vegas tied 2-2, and we would earn ourselves the opportunity to get one more home game. But by obviously winning the next game, you know, it changes everything in the trajectory of the series.
Big time.
Yeah, so, right, you make very good points there. So moving on to game four, as you've already mentioned, just doing the quick scoring recap. Okay, so 9:54 in the first, TJ Oshie opens the scoring, Evgeny Kuznetsov with another primary assist, and then about 6.5 minutes later, Tom Wilson puts them up 2-0. If you're familiar with everything, how this show works, yes, you knew that had great reactions in certain households.
It's no surprise here, and I know that Carol and her favorite player is Tom Wilson. So,
absolutely. And a word about him, because the game. I mean, we all know what happened, how it ended. But I heard this on the Elliot in the Morning radio show, and he was giving mad credit. Yeah, a big Caps fan. Absolutely great supporter of the team since he arrived from New York. Going on almost 20 years now.
Yeah,
he's been with us, I think.
I was in high school.
Yeah. But anyway, he was saying that he was giving mad credit to Tom Wilson because as he said, there were about seven or eight different times towards the end of the game where they were just baiting him. The Knights were. They were just baiting him and hitting him and slashing him and doing whatever they could to provoke him. And he, all he did was stood his ground, didn't retaliate, didn't do anything stupid, just kind of looked away. You got that famous smirk on his face every once in a while. You got the laugh out of him, but you knew he wasn't going to do anything to jeopardize and we keep using the word momentum that they had at that point.
Can I quickly interject one thing on him? Because I heard a great interview with him after the game, and it was just, I love the fact that he was asked by Pierre, I believe, you know, are you going to fight him in the next game, pretty much? And he said, he wants me to, I'm paraphrasing, but I'd rather play with Ovechkin and Kuzi. And I love that response. And I have to correct myself, it was 99 when Elliot joined the area, but I've been a big fan for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and this is the Tommy that has finally, you know, I hate to use the word mature, but it's like, that's exactly what this is. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, was leading penalty minutes and whatnot for fighting and how he started off the preseason, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And he's finally gotten to that point where it's like, okay, enough already. Like I want to be known as, you know, Tom Wilson, you know, first line, amazing hockey player and whatnot, and not Tom Wilson, you know, dirty, you know, accruing a ton of sin-bin minutes kind of. So I appreciate that. And I think, man, he has got a whole bunch of restraint because you can tell, I mean, when Reeves hit him with a stick yesterday in the face and there was absolutely no call. I mean, there are like all these ridiculous calls that you know, if Wilson did that to somebody else, he would be out for the rest of the games for this year, and it would probably carry over till next year. The way the
league has been getting hit in the back of his shins with the sticks by other players after the whistle. Like, they were trying to get under him the whole game. And I love the fact that, you know, he stands tall. And yeah, I have a funny little anecdote about that. I was at a party at a bar mitzvah, you know, upstate Pennsylvania, and somebody asked me, who turns out was a Penguins fan, what do you think of Tom Wilson? Do you think he's a dirty player? And I turned around and said, no, I think he's a great player. And that Penguins fan looked at me and turned around and walked away from the campfire, which I loved.
Awesome. He's not a dirty player, but, you know, whatever. Because he's on our team, and I love him, and I love his success. And I think this year he has just come out of, you know, out of that negative, like, persona that everyone sees. And he's my Tommy, so I'm going to always be pulling for him. But I do think tomorrow's going to be, or not tomorrow, when they're playing in Vegas, it's going to be, God, they're going to be all over him. All over him. So let's hope he can keep it together for one more.
I think he will. We've discussed his maturity more than once. I think he knows what's at stake. So we all saw we all had cause to be nervous, I think, for the first period. And on the Facebook page, a more desperate team. Well, I think we're all thinking it, but I'm going to come out and say it. If not for a crap ton of luck, I don't think the Caps come out of that period with the lead like they did, because there were at least three or four chances with their unmatched ability to swarm all three zones to take the lead. And a classic example of that was James Neal's post hit. And I do think he overthought the shot, which is great, because it means, you know, we're living rent-free in their heads. But, you know, you got to chalk it up to luck as being a key element. You want to call it puck luck, that's fine. But had Vegas capitalized on all of their chances, there's no way the Caps come away with the lead. So I think that was a factor in creating the, again, that M word. You keep on using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. That word. Sorry, Anna. But that M word again. But... will be later, I think. Yes, I am. But that M word.
Usually I'm listening to it on a podcast and I can't even reference it. So I'm usually laughing like 3 days later. So it's pretty hilarious. One thing I do want to say, because I agree, I think it would have been 2-2 at the end of the first if puck luck hadn't gone our way. But Devontae Smith-Pelly with that third goal to actually make it 3-0, I just thought that was such a clutch timing goal and just sort of recalibrated our whole team. So I wanted to put that out there, that he just kind of changed that whole period around for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been very good at that. And again, it comes back to timing. There's a lull, whether there's either a long lull in the offensive chances, creating scoring chances, anything like that, or if it's right after another goal. So if it's right on top of another goal, this team has been masters of making the moment count, the timing of the play. And that's, I think that's one thing that they've had over all of their opponents is that. So like Robbie just said, that was the third goal in the first, making it 3-0, which as it turns out becomes the winning goal, because Vegas had a little bit of a surge later on, back-to-back goals by James Neal and Riley Smith. After a Carlson power play goal, boy, is he going to make a lot of money.
Good.
And then Kempney and Connolly close out the scoring to end at 6-2. What Robbie just described a crucial moment where Smith-Pelly scored. Did that and or anything else stick out to you, Anna, in that game?
Honestly, I just love the fact that during the last, maybe it's been the second half of the season, we are not seeing the same people score each time, like, because everyone is stepping up. And I think that's what I love about this. You know, it's like Connolly was great, and then he kind of had a little lull in the season, and then he comes back, and look at him last night. And, you know, and I am huge. I know Zach mentioned this last night about Kempney, but oh my God, huge fan of his. You know, I feel like he's a humble player and kind of keeps to himself, and he's coming out. But you know what? You've got DSP scoring, and we have the ones that people that I'm not just fans, but you know, players are expecting the Ovechkins and the Kuzis and the Backstroms to score. But I love seeing, you know, the other side of it, because that tells me, you know, this is a team that is supporting each other, and all of, you know, they're just stepping up. But DSP, man, I just love the fact that, you know, he was kind of denied in the beginning of the game last, you know, and then he can come back and score, and he's so, just his reactions to everything is so fantastic. So I don't know, for me, I just love seeing, you know, everybody scoring. You know, I love that it just goes across the board, and it's not just, you know, falling on one or two players, and that we're not all 100% focused on just Brayden Holtby and what he's doing, because what he's doing is kick ass. I mean, wow, did not expect this when Grubauer was playing. We all kind of hoped he would get out of the mental, you know, mind fuck that we said he was kind of in, and now here he is doing exactly what we needed. But he is such a team player, and I just love that aspect of it. So I think what's standing out to me, sorry to like ramble there, but what's standing out to me is that I love the fact that there are so many people coming forward, and we're getting goals from all different players, vets, rookies, whatnot. And it's just great to see. And I thought yesterday's game was like, it was awesome. It was exciting. And just want to keep that, yeah, momentum. But I just want to keep that vibe going. How's that? We'll say vibe and not momentum.
Well, I want to piggyback off a couple of quick things that you just mentioned, because a couple of those were things I wanted to talk about. We get Kempney, you get Conley, you get Devontae Smith-Pelly. Those are all people that over the last 2 years our GM has gone out and got us. And, you know, on relatively cheap contracts or trade deadlines, I mean, Kempney had an opportunity for a layup earlier in the game, and he missed. And I said, oh, man, he's not going to get an easier chance at a goal than that. And, you know, at the very end of the game, he gets rewarded because of some Bush League play by Vegas at the end of it. I love the game. Didn't love Vegas's response at the end. I did like our response to the response by, you know, putting up some tallies at the end, and I think they were mad that we put our top power play line on, but, you know, it's the Stanley Cup Finals. You just keep on pounding. The only way to keep Vegas off of what they do is to keep scoring. That's how you beat Vegas. Vegas is good because they're spending time in our defensive zone, and the only way to beat that is spend time in, you know, their defensive zone. And I'm happy that we just kept on piling on. This is not a sport where it's like, oh, my God, you can stop throwing touchdowns now. Like, you need to actually continue to score and continue to put pressure. And they were doing some real Bush League stuff. I was actually hoping that some of those players would maybe face possible suspension. I mean, some of that stuff was headshots, after the whistle. I think, you know, if the league really wanted and cared about that, you know, which I'm mad that they suspend Tom Wilson, but then turn around and don't stop some of this after the play or headshots that I've seen towards the Capitals. And it's frustrating. And people are like, oh, you should just celebrate. It's a 6-2 win. And I did. And I loved every moment of it. And as you said, we got scoring from every single line. But I think that the league also needs to take a look at some of those antics by Vegas. And we got to sort of see Vegas for who they were, not this darling team that always keeps winning that nothing seems to be wrong with.
Absolutely. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think we should, it should be pointed out, but I don't think we should spend too much time on that, because it's always, you know, it's never good to dwell on that too much. I wouldn't think, because, you know, then you start playing the victim, and nothing good comes out of playing the victim. Just, I would say, stick to your discipline, stick to your game, and just get the job done. If they want to do what they're going to do, then yes, we need to stand up to them, because obviously the league is not. But I mean, that's not something they should dwell on or worry about. That's all I was going to say.
I don't want them to worry about it. My point was just, I think that there's a bit of a double standard, which I find interesting in the league, that I just wanted to point out some inherent bias that I sometimes see in refereeing in this league. And I was happy that some of that stuff that was after the fact got called. I'm still not quite sure why TJ Oshie got kicked out of the game at the end there. I think they were just starting to take everybody. But at the same, you know, but I didn't think what he did was particularly wrong. And I was, you know, happy that, you know, instead of fighting them physically, we fought them on the scoreboard. And I want to see more of that. Obviously, Tom Wilson had that great interview afterwards I talked about before, and, you know, he says that we need to stay the course, be composed, and I really want to win this in Vegas. I know that a lot of people are like, oh, we should win it at home. It's like, no, you win it as quickly as you can win it.
That's how I feel. I mean, I have a coworker that has a season ticket holder, and she was saying, you know what, I would love nothing more than to be a Capital One and, you know, have them bring it home or win it at home. She's like, but honestly, I just want them to win it in Vegas and end it. You know, like, enough already. Like, if this is, you just go out there and just keep doing what you're doing, and don't fall for those dirty plays that they're doing, and that, you know, and obviously the refs have hugely favored the Knights in the last couple of games. It's so blatant, it's sort of crazy, but I would rather see them come out and win the hockey game and win the series and win whatever it is. We don't even have to say necessarily that it has to be the Stanley Cup. I'm just saying, game by game, I want to see the Capitals win the game that they're playing, because they played kick-ass hockey, and they didn't have the dirty plays. versus, you know, the Knights having an opportunity to win because the refs are on their side and they're winning due to, you know, penalties and whatnot against them. So I'd rather go in there and just say, hey, listen, yeah, I'm kind of the underdog, but we're going to come out and we're just going to do what we've been doing and just ride it. But I think, you know, I just think going into Vegas is going to be tough. And if they can just kind of, I don't know how you can, but, you know, just don't even let those fans get in your head and play like they've been playing. That's just hell yeah. Let's just see him take it.
Save some Caps fans some money buying tickets to Capital One.
So. Right. So, yeah, it's absolutely insane.
Crazy.
Absolutely insane.
All right, so I want to jump in here and take this opportunity to go back to what we were discussing. But this is also going to be the Make Anna Groan Very Loudly in Frustration awesome. Moment of the episode. Because my two key points have to do with, it's going to be a bit of a history lesson. We talked about Devontae Smith-Pelly. Well, every deadline, every 1981, and I mentioned why that year is significant in a minute, but ever since that year, every team around the trade deadline looks for that key missing piece, that key element that adds to their team that helps them get over the hump. Well, I think for the Caps, it was actually in training camp that they got that missing piece in Devontae Smith-Pelly. Because he's been a difference maker, not mainly the difference maker, but a big one in a lot of games. So I think he was that one. And the why I reference 81 is because that, of course, was the second year of the New York Islanders dynasty. And that was the year they picked up Butch Goring. And everybody seems, you know, in the hockey history community seems to point to that trade in how they got to be so great. But thankfully it was not somebody in the middle of the season. Although as Robbie mentioned, Kempney was a very good pickup. That's turning out to be a steal. A great pickup. The second point I want to make is, what you guys were just talking about in that, especially you, Anna, in that, they have got to kill it. To kill this series, to kill this team now that they have the chance. They've got the dagger three quarters of the way in. They've got to shove it in all the way now that it's 3-1 and they're on the brink. And the reason it's important is because I read an interview a long time ago by Canadians the great Canadians goalie, Ken Dryden. And it was about the 1976 series. The final series against the Flyers, where they were the two-time defending cup champions. And they had the Canadiens jumped out to a 3-0 lead. And some journalist was asking him, well, you feel like you've got this in the bag, or are you okay with it? And he said, absolutely not. And he laid out a scenario where, okay, so say they win one, they get a few lucky bounces and they win one. Okay. So then they go back home and the home crowd is behind them. And they win there because of that. Now it's 3-2. And then it comes back to game six and they're really rolling now and the momentum's with them now. And then it becomes a tie series. And then you go to game seven where anything can happen. Mm-hmm. And that is the greatest case of all as to why when you've got a team down, you apply that killer instinct and you finish them when you can.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was happy to see, you know, Anna and I did two Game 6 preview shows together, and I was happy to see that at least earlier in this season, we were able to apply that killer instinct and, you know, win these games and win it in 6 and not force a 7, which gives me hope that we can, you know, try to do something similar here. But as you say, you know, the fourth win is always the most difficult win to get. You know, they're going to put everything they have. The fans are going to be crazy behind them. And, you know, obviously if it goes to 6, there's a lot of pressure back on us. And as you said, it can start to snowball. And then if it gets to game 7, who knows? But it's definitely going to be, an interesting matchup, and I think, you know, the key is just defensive structure. It's why we've won all these games. We've been one of the best defensive teams in hockey, and I think with that structure, and especially getting a whole set of people both on the red line and the blue line and playing staggered and being able to get into shot lane, you know, lanes, and Barry Trotz said it himself that, like, he doesn't expect players to be able to react in just a second. He wants people to be in certain locations so that way they have the best opportunity. And I think that we've been getting to those spots. We've been committed fully to shot blocking in a way that, you know, we've been good in the past. But, I mean, I've never seen Ovi block quite as many shots. And I think it's key that both our defenders and our forwards are fully committed as Holpe. And if we can do that, then we can win. But, you know, the key, as I was mentioning earlier, as the road team, the recipe for success is to try to keep it close and steal one at the end, you know. So, obviously, we can get up a couple of goals because they have a chance of coming back. That would be ideal. But the key is to continuously apply pressure and don't let up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So with that, yeah, definitely. So, with that, now I went into, and we've kind of sort of already gotten into it, but obviously there's one win left to be had. Next game up is Thursday night back in Vegas at T-Mobile. And it's kind of interesting if you go over the stats from game four, the shots on goal favored the Knights. And I think a large part of that was that opening first period that I described. Faceoff percentage, Vegas, 51-6 to 48-4 to be exact. Power plays is really where the Caps killed them, converted 3 of 5, Vegas none of 4. That's also kind of reflected in the penalty minutes, 20 for Washington, half of which of course were TJ Oshie's 10 minutes, and 32 for Vegas. So I think that right there is a key indicator that the Caps are in their heads. They're starting to force the play. They're making the Knights make mistakes, make mental mistakes and attitude mistakes, and getting them off their game. Now the hits, this is the one that bothers me a little bit. The hits were 39-29 for Vegas. And that I think in part may have been the aggressive attitude at the beginning of the game and the end of the game. But I don't know. I don't know if I like to see the Capitals being out hit, at least not like that, because that's kind of the game that they're owning. So I'm not sure if that's a very good sign. Of course, block shots, they tripled them up 24-8 favoring the Caps. Giveaways 18-7 Caps. Takeaways 18-8. As far as puck movement, that's the tail of the tape there. They're obviously the better puck movers. And better on defense overall. So if you look at those numbers, then yes, game five bodes well for the Capitals. But what do you both think are going to be other elements to look for in that?
That's a good question.
So Anna, you're the one with coaching experience. What do you tell these guys if you're Coach Trotz?
Honestly, to not think about which game number it is, because you don't want that to become that. I mean, you don't want it to become the focus, even though we all know it is the focus. But you want them to basically say, this is what's worked for us. This is what we're doing again. There is nothing different than how you guys are going to play in Vegas versus how you played in DC the last two games. Like, keep that mindset going, the chemistry going, the camaraderie, everything else. That they just need to just kind of look at it like game by game, not be looking at it like, we do this and then, but then we could play at home and, what's the game seven and this and that. No. You're doing it game by game and you're taking it one day at a time. And you're not going to start changing things up. And I absolutely love Connolly for saying, you know, we need to play hockey. We don't need to do anything cute. I couldn't agree more. Now, you know, you just go out there and do what you're supposed to do. Be where you're supposed to be. No sloppy passes. You know, no, don't let them get into your head with, you know, the stupid fights and the fans and whatnot. No, keep the mindset of it is 60 minutes at a time, and play like they've been doing the last couple of games. That's all he's going to say. You know, there's no need to sit down in front of a bunch of, you know, grown men athletes. They know what the end result is. I mean, come on, everybody does. So to keep talking about it and talking about it is one thing, but as a coach, you have to say, I'm going to look at it at this is the next 60 minutes that we're focused on. And whatever happens after that, you know, we'll talk about that time frame and what needs to be done, if anything needs to be done. But I have a feeling that, you know, like Gil, you and I have supported Trotz this whole time, you know, and I always got really angry at people who were throwing the coach under the bus or any coach under the bus, because it's like, you know, listen, don't you point fingers at the coach when it comes down on the players needing to step up and do what they're supposed to do. And so when we're in that kind of situation, you know, it's like Trotz knows what he's doing, and we just had to have faith and he was making all the right decisions and changing the lines up to see what was going to work best for the team and look at where we're at right now. So I think he's just going to tell them to go out there and have a good time.
So I have a couple of quick points to make on that Trotz coaching thing, because I thought he's done an impressive job this year trying to mix and match throughout the year so people are comfortable in a bunch of different lines. You know, they're not too
right.
settled on a line, so they're comfortable knowing every other player's tendency. And he's, I think, you know, a lot of coaches, you know, set in, these are my four lines. They're going to be the four lines no matter what. And I think the, you know, opposing coach is facing this a little bit. He doesn't want to relent from his lines. But in sometimes when you're down in a series, you got to change things up to try to take back the momentum, give people a different look and whatnot. But I think that that's been a real strength for us, that we've really, he's preached a system and the players are kind of interchangeable in that system. So it doesn't matter which player you're playing with. And you could see that mid-game adjustments, that Barry Trotz was actually changing our lines at the end of game four for better defense, having two centers, you know, on the line at times, you know, having, you know, Backstrom and Beagle on the line to, you know, for better defense, or, you know, having multiple centers on lines late game. So that way, if you're kicked out of the faceoff, you've got another person who can go in there and take the faceoffs for you. One thought I also wanted to mention to Gil's question is, what sort of mentality as a coach that you want to impart onto your players? I think the key mentality for me is they should go back and treat it like it's game two. Game two is a perfect recipe for success. You're down early in an opposing building, and it's very loud. A situation that we could easily find ourselves in on Thursday. And, you know, the Capitals are able to come back. You know, Lars Eller is able to tie that game up and right before the end of the first. You know, whether they score two goals and we have to have two to tie it back up. You know, there's an opportunity that we may find ourselves down. You're in an opposing building. And you have to, you know, think that this is a real possibility. Even though, obviously, I would want the Capitals to score first and be up by a lot. I mean, that's an ideal situation. But we were able to fight our way back in, you know, score two clutch goals in the second. Then they got one back on a power play, and that's the key, is on the road, you got to stay out of the box because the fans are going to push them. But if you could do that and see the course, even if you're down, I think that that's a huge key in a mindset. I want them to think that they're down 1-0 in this series, not that they're up 3-1. Think about it, that this other team is going to have desperation, and you've got to match this level of desperation, and that's going to be a huge key, is we've never played a Vegas who's this desperate. And, you know, sometimes they say, you know, an animal that's wounded is the most dangerous animal, and Vegas has never been in this situation, so I'm hoping that the Capitals can take advantage of that, that they've never been in an elimination game in their franchise history. The Capitals have been in games like that, many of our players. Now, some of the players on this team have been in those situations, so it's not like they're a team of rookies, but at the same time, they've never had to deal with it together. And so I'm hoping that we can match their level of desperation and just go one period at a time, one play at a time. Don't look too far ahead. And just if we can win all three periods, we will win that game.
Yeah.
So yes, the thing about desperation, I was you literally took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say something like that, in that they have to match their desperation, and they've been good at that so far. But now Vegas literally has their backs against the wall, so
yeah.
We're not going to know. We're not really come of that until the first five to 10 minutes of the game comes out. And this time they're going to have the home crowd behind them. And they don't want to go home. I don't think, you know, they're sounding like, acting like, you know, posturing like they're the defeated team already, but I don't think they want to at least, you know, have it end on their home ice. So I think that amount of that kind of pride, that attitude is going to show up and bubble up, at least during those first 10 minutes. So, again, that's going to be key. And as you said, Robbie, they have to match that desperation. If they just show up like it's some other throwaway game, then they're going to lose for sure. They certainly cannot come to the game with that attitude. They must absolutely apply that killer instinct and be as desperate, if not more, than what Vegas is right now.
Right. Well, and Gil, you always talk about like the first 10 minutes, and I agree with you, because it says so much about, like you said, body language and jitters and adrenaline and all that kind of stuff, of being sure that they are in the right mindset to, you know, relax and play together and whatnot. However, we have seen the Capitals kind of diminish a little bit when it comes to the third period. And that, to me, that's what I think. It's not going to be the first 10 minutes. And I mean, I agree with you, yes, but I think what really comes down to is how the team is going to play the second half. You know, that the second half of that hour of, like, just, you know, not getting comfortable and not getting desperate and not all of a sudden trying to come and score a bunch of goals, you know, in like the last minute. I think that is where we have to come out strong, but we have to keep it strong all 60 minutes. And, you know, I have faith in them and I think they're going to do it, but man, I just really feel like Thursday is going to be kind of a dirty game, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of chippiness, a lot of attitude, and they're going to want to put on a brave face, and it might get a little dirty at times. And you know, I've completely lost faith in the officials, both on and off the ice, to keep control of that. But you know, if the Caps can stay disciplined, I don't think it'll be too much of a problem. Okay, so I think we want to head towards winding it up here.
I got a couple of quick questions that I wanted to bring up
to
you guys before we wound up. Well, two things. One thing I wanted to bring up was Ovi's tying the record, 14 goals, and in the single postseason, tying John Drews's 1990 mark. So that's an incredible thing that I'm just so proud of him for. And you know, it's a big milestone, and obviously Cousy hitting 30 points is also another rare milestone. These are two things that in the last 20 years have only happened a handful of times. And so I just wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to those two players for really showing up, you know, especially Cousy after the big contract year. People were wondering, oh man, he asked a lot of money. He put the Capitals in a bad situation. Remember, there was talk before the season started that he really hindered our ability to keep some of these other players, and Marcus Johansson, among others. And so I think it's interesting. One thing I like to also look at, you talked about getting Devontae Smith-Pelly. I'm very thankful that the New Jersey Devils paid out the rest of his contract and let him go explore elsewhere, and that's how we got him. We didn't get him in a trade, you know, so it was a buyout, and then he came and he tried out for our team, and it worked out. So I know we talked about Devontae earlier, and I think that is – such a key moment. The one other thing, two other things I want to talk about was one was a quick question for you guys was Bryce Harper wearing a Vegas Golden Knights jersey. Did that upset you? I'm a Capitals fan. I respect that that is his hometown. He has come to Capitals Arena in Capitals gear before, obviously, because there was no Golden Knights before. And he's been treated to a lot of games and a lot of respect and a lot of cheering for him. Max Scherzer came last night. The Capitals. He's actually on the mound tonight. So he was one of the fans for the game, kind of like Joe Gibbs was for Game 3. But
wasn't he with Zimmerman?
Oh, yeah, and Zimmerman, too, yeah. And so, Gil, what are some of your thoughts about some people were saying on the Sports Junkies this morning that he should have just stayed home. They have no problem him rooting for the team, but they thought that it was cocky of him to come to the arena and do it there. Gil, what are some of your thoughts about people who are supporting? I heard that Britney Spears is now a fan of Vegas.
God.
So, what are your thoughts on how a team appropriates fans?
You're going to gravitate to a team for, whatever. I don't want to get, too personal or too into it, but my actual first favorite hockey team was the old Atlanta Flames because, I was a 3-year-old at the time. My dad was, I was an Army brat and I was, my dad was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. And, we'd watch them on TV and go to Flames games. And that was actually my first favorite team. And then, we moved back to Maryland and he was stationed in Fort Meade and the Caps have been my team ever since. So everybody's got their reasons. But as far as Bryce Harper, it was a little cocky, but if he's feeling, for lack of a better phrase, a little butthurt right now, cause his team is, letting him down. So be it. It's the price of doing business, I say. So I mean, I don't want to make too much out of this because it's their fan experience. I can't speak to that. The only thing I can speak to is the Caps fan experience, which is what we do here on our show. And so, I mean, he wants to rep his hometown team. He's welcome to it, but
I actually make fun of him online for it, but I don't hold any ill will towards him for doing it. I'm not going to like suddenly not root for Bryce Harper in tonight's game. That's not going to happen because I'm a Nationals fan. But, it's just I found it interesting that the media sort of spun it a million different ways. But one other question I had for you, because I don't want to end on that question, but is the city's support for the Capitals. Obviously, I'm a big Capitals fan. I've listened to this podcast for a long time. Sports on the Hill has now been on for 104 episodes. And so, I obviously root for all the DC sports teams. I want them all to do well. I hope that they all get championships. But obviously not everybody in this town has been a fan of the Capitals from the beginning. But now, when you win, suddenly everybody comes out. And I'm okay with people jumping on the bandwagon. And I heard last week on your show that you were encouraging people to become fans of the Capitals, and I always support that. But I just found it really interesting, some of the quotes that Trott said today, that he says that you see the enthusiasm in the city, you see thousands of people outside the arena watching the game. It would mean a lot. It would mean a lot to the community. It would mean a lot to me personally, and I know it would mean a lot to the players. And I love that quote. I got it in an NHL.com article. But because it's just, I feel like this sort of sense of community building in D.C., and it's just really, it's heartwarming because I always assume it would, maybe be the Redskins or the Nationals that would break through just because of previous Capitals heartache. But the Capitals have always been my number one favorite sports team. And I'm just so excited, that we're on this precipice of this really big moment. I just hope that we can finish the deal because they will become legends in this town forever if they can do this.
I agree. I am that bandwagon fan, please. That's every sport has that. But honestly, when it comes down to DC, I feel like there has been so much frustration and heartbreak and whatever else with our current leader, for lack of better words, that, you know, so much focus is on, you know, Trump and DC and politics and whatever, that it's like, you know what? No, we are better than that. And as a community of sports fans, when they rally together and you see Nats fans in the audience and Wizard fans and everyone supporting each other, that is what I absolutely love. It's like, I don't want to talk about politics. I don't give a crap about the White House drama. I just think that I love the fact that we have thousands of Rock the Red fans on the streets of D.C. There was no rioting. There was no looting. Not that there's, you know, of course, it could always happen, but everyone was just, like you said, a community. And, you know, you're with people and excited, and everyone has the best interest. And why not just, you know, be together with a community of thousands of people who are there to celebrate something rather than protest something, which is very much, you know, a DC thing these days. And I absolutely love that energy and think you just can't go wrong. And to go back to the Bryce Harper thing real quick, he would have not done that had he not released the tweet back in whenever it was, September, October, saying, wouldn't it be great if it was a Vegas Cup, Stanley Cup series. If he did not say that and somebody brought it up again, we would not be seeing all this drama with him right now. So he's just playing a PR role on the showing up with the Vegas stuff. So whatever. When he's playing for the Nats, you know, good for him, root for him, what he does, you know, I don't care. There's too many other things out there I'd rather, you know, acknowledge, like Wonder Woman and Pat Sajak and all those other cool fans that we have out there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. One last thing that I wanted to bring up, because you know, I'm fortunate that I do have press credentials to the Mystics, which is rare that actually becomes a newsworthy thing on a Capitals blog, but I don't a podcast. You know, it's a really interesting story that happened today. I just wanted to bring it to our listeners' attention. So at the start of the day, they said, if you buy tickets to a Mystics game, you can keep that seat for the viewing party on Thursday, right? So
right.
Suddenly the value of Mystics tickets skyrocketed to this, you know, and it was this really interesting thing. I was like, Mystics tickets going for $750 on StubHub, Mystics tickets going for $1,000 on StubHub, and I'm like, oh my God, the secondary market of this is ridiculous. And so, and then there was a confusion, because Mystics season ticket holder rep said, no, the tickets are good, you can stay in your seat. And there's Caps fans that say, well, there's a viewing party, and it says general admission, and if we don't get to enter until, you know, after the game is over, we're only going to be able to sit in the 400, and we don't want to have to buy Mystics tickets to just be in a good seat for the viewing party. So what are they going to do, right? So you now have the Caps PR said that everyone's going to have to leave after the Mystics game and re-enter.
Right.
So now people have bought these tickets for these crazy values, and now they're saying that, you know, now you're stuck with a Mystics ticket for a lot of money, but it doesn't matter because free admission. So late today, Monumental actually released a statement. No one to let people know, so that way they know what the end of this crazy situation was. And so you can attend the viewing party and see the Mystics play, or just go to the viewing party, but you do need a ticket to get in. The ticket is free. And what they did was they said anyone who has a previous ticket to this game for the Mystics, they can get an immediate refund. They canceled, quote-unquote, the Mystics game and created a new event called the Mystics and Capitals Viewing Party. And it starts at 3 o'clock, I believe, and you can get early admission if you're one of those card holders. But anyway, so at 3 o'clock, you can go to the Mystics game that starts at 4. Hopefully the Mystics game won't go into quadruple overtime or something crazy. And then you can watch the Caps game afterwards, and it's all general admission, and it's all free. So it's going to be interesting. Those tickets go on sale tomorrow to the public, and I'm going to be curious because they're going to get bought out real fast because everyone wants to be in the arena for that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. They go on sale 16 hours from now when we're taping this, which is 8 o'clock. But it's middle of day Wednesday, I believe. And, yeah, it's 1 p.m. on Wednesday. These tickets go live. So I don't know if this podcast will be out before then. But it's going to be a madhouse to try to get tickets, but they will open the ability to view the game from outside of the arena as well, just like they have for all of the home games this past week. So I just wanted to let people know that you do not buy Mystics tickets for $1,000 on resale. That's a bogus thing, and they're warning people, please do not buy resale. And I hope that by canceling the event, quote-unquote, people can get their money back if they spent $1,000 on a Mystics ticket. So I just wanted to let the Power Play Point podcast listeners know about that crazy saga that was today with the Mystics viewing party.
Well, thank you.
Robbie, thank you so much for clearing that up. I do have quite a few Twitter friends confused about that, and I thought they were going to resolve it. I just didn't know how, and you just put out the resolution of that. So Robbie, 1,000 thanks to you for that. That's great stuff. Thanks for letting everybody listening know. And hopefully, yeah, and thanks to Monumental for, you know, clearing that up and taking care of their fans, which, you know, for the most part, they tend to do. So I'm glad that ended well. I think the both of you, I mean, Anna, you and I could always talk forever, about just about anything. And Robbie, you and I could talk forever and, you know, a few other topics that, you know, we've come to share a kinship with. Unfortunately the clock on the wall is starting to say that we're getting a little long here. So we're going to have to wrap it up. Obviously we're excited for, game five. It's an 8 o'clock puck drop, as we all know, 5 o'clock local time. It's going to be on NBC, I believe it is. We're done with NBCSN. Again, 8 o'clock start time. Hopefully they wrap it up and get it done here. Don't want to speak for Anna here, but, great having you on. I love it that you were able to make time and come on with us. And we really, really hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you both, you know, for keeping all of our Caps fans, you know, entertained and all the knowledge that you guys give. I really enjoy your podcast. It's funny, I used your last couple podcasts as my pregame show for the Saturday game. So I enjoyed listening to you guys leading up to puck drop.
Oh my God, Robbie, that was, you have no idea, that was probably the greatest compliment I've ever gotten about this podcast. Thank you so much.
Of course. And I want to actually extend an invitation to the both of you guys, since you've been great help on Sports on the Hill podcast. A quick plug, facebook.com/sportsothb or Sports on the Hill podcast on Facebook. Or sportsothb.com. But anyway, enough of the plugs. I want to invite both of you guys to the show next week. Carol's doing a live. He's going to be at this really awesome event. You can check it out on our Facebook page. But it's a big True Radio Network happy hour. And he's going to be calling in from the happy hour live to the Monday podcast. And I will be doing it live in the man cave, doing it kind of solo a little bit. But I was actually looking to you guys to maybe co-host one of my segments. I could bring you both on Monday, and hopefully we can recap an exciting conclusion of this series or preview a Game 7, which is, I hope, is not necessary. So I was looking to do that. We're also scheduled to have a potential gold medalist, gold medal winning hockey player join the podcast if we're able to get it done. So, you know, obviously I'm rooting for that. Of course, I'm a Caps fan, but also because Haley Skrupa is amazing. So we'd like to have her back on the podcast. She was on episode 98, I believe, of our show. And so, you know, I'd love to have you guys be one of my hockey segments if we can pull this out. I'm going to have hockey fans from all over the country calling in. I would love to have that opportunity to have both of you guys on next week.
I'm not going to speak for Anna because she's got an uber busy schedule, but yeah, I think I can swing that.
That'd be awesome.
Definitely. Well, and I had RSVP'd to the thing thinking that I was going to meet Robbie and Carol for the True Radio Network thing in person. And it may just be me meeting Carol in person for the first time, but I'm not actually sure if I'm going to be able to go because of, like Gil said, this is a kind of crazy schedule I have. It's nothing too exciting, but yeah. So I think calling in next Monday is not an issue at all.
Yeah. Well, and if you're at the event, you can join Carol live from that side too. So you can be interviewed in person by Carol in theory at that event if you end up going. So we can maybe catch you either way. So, but I just wanted to let the listening audience know about that happy hour. If they want to meet Carol in person, I highly encourage people to go do that. But if they want to listen to a Caps podcast, hopefully in the positive, we'll do that. If not, we'll preview an important Game 7. Either way, I'm excited that no matter what, at least we can't be out by Monday. So I've been excited all year because my goal of the whole season was to get to episode 100 on the podcast and have the Caps still be playing. And they were playing for episode 104, and we got a win last night. So I highly encourage people to go back and check that out. And it was great. We had Zach from all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Lee was able to call from the steps of the Portrait Gallery and give us a live update on how the fans are doing. So obviously you now know the results of Game 4, but if you want to go back to listen to some of our pregame banter, it was a pretty entertaining show.
Yeah, that it was. I know, and you want to close this out. So,
okay.
So, Gil, do your corny little thing. Because now you have to, because if we don't do it, it's going to cause problems. So go ahead and do your little thing.
Wow. What a...
what a setup.
Okay, want to thank the fans for listening. Make sure you tune in to NBC for Game 5, 8 o'clock puck drop. So this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off for Anna Knox and Robbie Gross. Thanks again for coming on the show and reminding you that if you bother a banking institution long enough, sooner or later, they will leave you alone. Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps.
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.